You're recording?
My phone's in the truck, so if you were calling, yeah, I'm sorry.
I think the first thing on the agenda is to stand and pledge of allegiance, please. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank God we still have that.
Call to order. This meeting is the agenda. Follow the agenda here and have a roll call, please. And turn your cell phones off. Save your comments for later.
Richard Contestable?
Yeah, he's here.
Richard Contestable is here.
Contestable?
Yes. Sorry about that.
Camille Soares Brown?
Here.
Thomas Bean?
Here.
Al Cornell?
Yeah.
Richard Heath?
Here.
Ken Range?
Yes.
Wesley Fairchildy?
Here.
Kim Boone, Budget Officer?
Here.
Gary Bellinger, Port Manager?
Here.
Travis Webster, Harbor Master?
Here.
Daniel Shepherd? Here.
I think the next on the agenda is to have Mr. Dillinger give a brief message as to the budget of the 2020 budget.
Yep, thank you, Al. So the budget message was provided to you guys in your packet that we gave you. There's a couple minor changes. I actually added a few things to the budget message. I was just going to review those changes. So on page 2, under Marina Basin 1, I added the work was completed in fiscal year 2019 for the project. I added that sentence in there. The next page, page 3, I added in the RV park. We're redoing the RV park with possible hotel-type rooms. Added that part of the sentence. Then the last page, on capital funds for this. Last page, page 5. Under capital funds, after we talked about the state lottery funds, the port actually has 3 years to use the funds or lose the funds.
Right.
So that sentence is put in there. And then the last thing that I updated on the challenges ahead, page 5, also down a little bit further down. Other challenges include maintaining existing assets at a level to continue providing services and support to customer use of the port. So that being said, does anybody have any questions in the budget message as a whole?
Any questions? Any comments? Then we'll have a brief conversation with Kim Boone.
Yeah, so from here, we'd like to go over the details of the budget.
Oh, okay.
And
sorry.
We have it up here. I guess first off, the budget calendar, this is where we're at on the budget calendar, where it's highlighted. So we're at May 14th, 3 p.m. If we need more meetings, then we have more meetings, but hopefully we get the budget approved in this meeting. And then we have got to publish a budget hearing and then have a budget hearing with the Board of Commissioners, which is scheduled on June 18th, and a Tuesday regular meeting. And then we enact resolutions to adopt. And then once that gets approved, then we submit the tax certification documents and then all the rest of the budget documents to the county clerk. We usually do it long before September 30th. Usually it's done by, everything's done by July 15th, typically. Any questions on the calendar? Questions on the calendar. So I think the next question I have for you guys, maybe even Kim, is do you guys understand the format? When I say format, this form here, everybody understands that this column here, this is what we're proposing for this calendar year. The other three columns here, the first column here is the last, is our current budget for last year's budget, 2018-2019. Then the two prior years is actuals, numbers for reference.
So this is all the income to the general fund, correct?
Yeah, well, this here is resource. I'm just asking if you guys have any questions on this form, because this form is actually a state form that we're using.
Right.
We don't modify it.
Does everybody understand the form?
I found it easy to understand.
Okay, good, good.
All right, so if nobody has any questions on the form, we're gonna go basically section by section. I'll let Kim kind of explain how she came up with some of these numbers. And if you have any questions for each section, then we'll just answer them and just go through the whole budget.
This is page?
Page two?
Yeah, this is page two in your book here.
So is everybody on page two?
No.
Page two in the book should be the same as this page that you're looking at.
This, in my book, it says page 438. I don't know if that makes any difference. Oh, that's general fund.
General fund resources?
Go back one more.
Oh, I see it. Okay.
There you go. Keep going back.
I see it coming.
There we go. Okay. So basically we have a summary, the detailed page of what Gary just showed you. We have a summary to make it easier. And did everybody have a chance to look through that? Anybody have any questions on what we're proposing for the resources for the general fund?
Is this was reviewed by Mr. Dillinger?
Yes.
Okay. And this money is supposed to be in the general fund right now or in this fiscal year?
This is what we're proposed. Like, for example, number one, cash on hand, that's what we're thinking. We're estimating our cash balance to be of as of July 1st.
July 1st, okay.
And we used, to come up with these numbers, we used actuals from the previous year and then the estimated annual average of this fiscal year, because we don't have the fourth quarter yet, so we estimated that, prorated it, and then put the two together and came up with the average.
Okay. So total, go ahead.
Cash on hand, we're required to have a certain amount of cash on hand to begin the new fiscal year to make up for the lag between the start of the fiscal year and when the tax.
Yeah, that's normally a good thing to do. Yeah, you have a really good point there.
But I mean, we're
until we receive the note, start receiving in November. We get a little bit throughout the year, but it's not really very much right now.
Okay. Well, the reason I asked that is that in previous budget lives that I've done, sometimes people don't like money carried over. If you're in the state system, for example, you don't have the same problem the court does. But if you're carrying over a lot of money, then people are going to want to know, well, why didn't you spend it?
Yeah.
So when I saw that, I thought, well, but then there's an explanation in here as to why that's there. So that makes sense. But I just want to be clear on that. That's,
yep,
that's a requirement to start the year with that.
Right.
Or something like that. Okay.
Yeah, later on, I think, your answer would be question, because what we're planning for this budget, let's find the page. It's a combination of all these expenditures. I think what we're planning on the end of this budget cycle, we're gonna have $40,000 left. That's what we're planning on. So to answer your question, the next budget cycle, if we go by this, if we spend all the money that we're planning on, we'll have $40,000 left in the bank starting a new cycle instead of the $375,000.
And you're right, that number there, like the $375,000 or the $40,000 he's talking about, that we can't use that at all. It has to stay there.
It has to be stayed.
That 40,000 needs to be in that, needs to be in the bank.
We have to have a minimum carryover of 40,000.
Right. Is that right?
There has to be something there. I don't know if we have any minimum number, but, you know, for...
Well, but I mean, from a practical sense, that's what you think it, that's what you think is prudent for us to have on hand at the beginning of the fiscal year to get us through that lag period.
Yes, I think, I believe so.
So in other words, you guys came up with that number?
After budgeting out what we got, yes.
Okay. That's not mandatory, in other words?
No.
Another, so the $3 million is the total income from the resources in this port, right?
Yes.
Not counting the grants and loans and things like that?
That's correct.
Yes.
Okay. That's pretty simple. So with these total resources, the labor and material that you guys need comes from...
Yeah, so if you go to the...
This total.
If you go to the next, okay, so the next page is just the detailed sheet.
Yeah.
It corresponds to the other one. So the next one is the administrative marina. And this is basically our overhead. Wherever all the overhead expenses fall, personnel, and that sort of thing.
So it's a $654,000.
Probably just a comment on this. It took me a couple of minutes to figure out, when you're looking here at total full-time equivalents, I'm thinking there's a lot more than 5.13 people that work down there. But then I figured out how you did that later on. So you're charging out to each...
Right, each department.
Each revenue center, or whatever you want to call them.
Yep.
Does everybody understand what he just asked about the full-time?
It's on page three?
Page five.
Page five, he's talking about this column right here, total...
Oh, okay.
Full-time equivalent. That's just the average employee count.
Total personnel service.
I also have a question on line item two, where it says adopted budget for 18-19, and it shows a salary for the port manager of $100,000. Set aside.
That's just, that was a budgeted number.
So what's the difference between that and the actual?
Well, we don't have the actual for that, because we'll have the actual on 6/30/19.
Right.
Because we're still in that period.
Yeah, these numbers are still budgeted numbers. These are not actual numbers.
So what you do is you take your budgeted numbers?
I'm just sliding across to the other side, proposed by the budget officer. Now you're proposing a salary of $84,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the actual salary.
That's for this?
Yes, that's my salary.
And so why was the $100,000 budgeted last?
Because we didn't know if we were going to get him.
Yep.
We weren't sure if he was coming back, so we figured, you know, Newport was starting their manager at $125,000 a year. We figured, well, I guess we might be shopping at about $100,000 a year.
Got it.
We've got the bargain over here.
Yeah, we got a bargain.
Anything else? Okay, Kim.
So, okay, so no one has any more questions about administrative marina?
Oh, the...
The capital outlay?
What is the professional fees? That engineering lawyers, or what is that?
Yes, you got it right.
Okay.
You guys did see we have money in here for putting power on D-Dock. This is our estimated cost, $90,000. Yes, don't say okay.
Good. So beachfront RV park. Of course, we lowered the resources, $40,000, because of the lost amenities and the dry camping pit. But we increased professional fees for the RV park renovation, about $70,000.
I have a question on that. The $10,000 for seawall construction drawings, doesn't the Corps have to, which comes first? The Corps has to approve the drawings he comes up with, or do they even get involved? They'd have to be involved at the one member of the jetty.
The cord, I don't believe, well, I'm not sure where the cord's gonna come into play. I know there's, I can't remember what the term is, it's the mean water level, or...
The cord will come into it at some point.
They probably will, but this here is strictly our engineer's cost of developing construction drawings. And that's just a pure estimate of, I mean, it could be cheaper than that. But at first, we need conceptual drawings. I don't know what the board of commissioners are gonna want to see out there. It could be just a simple rock wall, or it could be a concrete wall. I don't know, but...
For $10,000, I'm trying to figure that part out, because the jetty belongs to the Corps of Engineers, if I understand that correctly. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
So the seawall in front, does the Corps own that? Do we own that?
No, the port owns that, as far as I understand.
And, but if you're gonna raise that seawall, you're gonna change all the current flows at different times at high tide. So does the Corps contribute engineering, or do they have to prove it after we do these drawings, or do we have to spend this money first?
I don't know. You have to come up with some drawings first.
Numbers, okay.
To me, you gotta come up with some idea of what you wanna do. I don't even know what the board even wants to do out there. So we need to come up with some conceptual drawings first, come to the board and say, what exactly do you want?
I think that's pretty fundamental, because that's gonna set a lot of elevations for you.
Sure.
As you go across.
Yep.
Which will then lead to the question, if it's significantly higher, which I think it's gonna be, are we gonna match it? Or are we gonna leave it and have a look over? So,
right.
But I think that's a pretty baseline thing you're gonna have to figure out what that's gonna look like.
Right.
Okay. How far in the future do you think this is gonna come together? Just the drawings and everything else. Have you talked to anybody about it yet?
Yeah, I've talked to Jack Aiken, our engineer.
So what do you say?
Well, probably in a couple months we might have conceptual drawings, and then hopefully...
Well, he would have the knowledge as to the core of approving things like that.
Yeah, but before you can go to the core, the ports need to figure out what they're gonna do first. So that's the first step, is to go through the process of getting the drawings.
You should know the process that's required there.
Isn't it going to be, don't you have to do a lot of consideration about what's going to happen with silt accumulation when this thing is done, before you can start a conceptual drawing?
I don't think so.
No, is all this seawall is doing is just stopping, every year we deal with logs and debris blowing
debris,
over.
Debris.
By raising that, we're stopping it. I mean, that's, mm-hmm. it's, we're just trying to keep the driftwood from barreling into the RV park.
Right. Yeah, it won't be changing the...
So there's not gonna be any particular difference in water circulation? Okay.
I don't think so.
I can't foresee it changing how it's going to be. I mean,
is there any way to ask the Corps of Engineers what they suggest, or do we already know what they suggest?
That's what Atkins is all about.
Okay, so we have an idea of what is suggested.
What he does. I don't know what.
Right, but I mean, if we, it seems to me like you would, if they're going to approve it and do it, you'd go to them first.
Right, in coordination,
before
of course,
you even spend a cent and say, what do you guys think?
Right.
I mean, that's free, right? To go, hey, what do you think we should do? Because we're gonna go back to this person, we're gonna ask him to draw this up. What would you like to see? You guys are the engineers, you're the professionals. What would you like to see? And then, you see what I mean? And then
well, I imagine Jack Aiken's been has experience with this kind of stuff.
I would hope, because we're gonna spend 10 grand. But
exactly. And I think it would be a minor alteration from what he proposes to what they need. It's on board property, so it's sort of a...
I mean, it doesn't cost anything to ask.
Right.
Oh, no, we're just setting aside that, about $10,000. I mean, not saying we're going to spend up to $10,000. I mean, we're just setting aside $10,000 for a drawing.
Yeah.
Right.
A first step of being able to do anything, have to put what you want on paper.
That makes sense.
And it's gotta come from an engineer.
Well, I'm not real familiar with things on the ocean, but I am pretty familiar with 404 permits, and I can't imagine that the seawall is gonna require a 404. I mean, that would be a stretch to call that fill, to me.
We're talking more of like a 4-foot retaining wall. I mean, is what we're talking, it's not. It's a big deal, but it's not a huge deal, we're not impacting things.
What you're trying to do is stop the debris coming over, not the water.
Well, I mean, the water, you know, I mean.
It's gonna be multiple.
It's gonna, we're gonna do the best we can, so we're not dealing with overtoppings on a day, you know, on a winterly basis. And we're gonna get everything up to height, everything flat. So, I mean, it's just a big dip out there right now is what it is. We got a big low spot.
Have anybody talked to Jack Agnes yet?
Yep.
And what did he say?
He'll get us drawings soon.
Okay.
We just gotta get this budget approved.
Okay.
And then, once this is approved, then we can spend the money, you know, tell him we can spend the money.
Is this something that would be a permanent structure or something that can
absolutely.
Be moved?
No. It'd be a permanent structure.
So where does the state's property end on the beach?
Depends who you talk to.
High water time.
What agency says that entire beach is the ports? Another agency it's the high water line or something or low water.
Mean high tide.
Mean high tide or yeah.
And then
other people say
anything as soon as you touch the sand.
Yes. It's all over the place. But I think we do know the top of that walkway, at the end of that walkway, where the riprap, that's port land. Then once you step down on the sand, then it's all wishy-washy.
Gray area, we call it.
But it's highly likely it belongs to the state under the jurisdiction of state park, right?
Probably.
Well, I'm not suggesting we poke the bear if we don't have to, but I'm just curious where that starts and stops.
It's a tough conversation to have with anybody about who deals with that beach. We do have maps in there that show it from three different agencies of where their lines actually, where they determine it's at. And they're all over the place. So.
It really depends what happens out there.
Yeah.
If a
boat lands on it,
it's our
beach. You can drive out there, you can do whatever you want. If it comes to styrofoam on the beach, then it's the state's beach. They'll tell us exactly what we have to do. It really is strongly dependent on what you're asking to do. If you have a fire out there and somebody has to come put it out, it's Coos Forest. Usually it has to come put it out, so.
But then they'll ask Harbor Fire.
But then Harbor Fire also will come to it. So
it's
a very controversial topic.
Sorry,
Sesame Street.
Wow. Next.
Okay, so the next one is Boatyard, page 8. I guess it's only we increase the requirement for the disposal abandoned vessels. That's
how many vessels can you get rid of with that kind of money?
It really depends. If you have a contractor do it, if you have port employees do it, if we try and recoup some of our money and have, you know, it's really hard to say.
Type of vessels out there, you got big vessels, you got small vessels, so it varies.
40,000, one or two.
One or two
is up to
the discretion of the. You guys have any plans to get rid of some of this stuff?
Gotta have money to do it.
That's why it's in the budget.
It's such a huge cost. It's something that has to be talked about. Budget.
You got the environmental stuff to deal with that too. So.
Yep.
Al, they went with the state. Can you explain what you went with me on how you came up with the number?
Well, the state has done a study. It's still in a draft stages, but they gave us a copy of the draft. And the entire state of Oregon ports, they estimated the average cost for disposal of abandoned vessels $21,000. So if you did that, that's basically two vessels there. But like I said, we got, you know, that's the average, so smaller vessel could be lower.
We're way under the, what the state is averaging for,
you know, a vessel. The only thing that goes through my mind is when somebody gets, you know, moorage here, for them to be responsible for that boat until, you know, it disappears. Is there any kind of tools that you can use as far as charging, you know, insurance or anything else would be available? Nothing. Every port deals with it this way?
Every port has to deal with it.
Right? Oh, I understand that, but...
I mean, you got to kind of sit back and ask yourself, I mean, what possible things can you think of that would work? That's fair. I mean, put an age limit on boats? And here, like an RV park?
I would say the port insurance would cover something like that, which would be passed on to the mortgage holder.
Well, no way will insurance touch one of those boats.
The only way you could make it work would require some kind of a bond, which would
make
mortgage impossible.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't.
I mean, the fees would be far beyond what you would want.
This issue is actually not only statewide. It's
nationwide.
You know, it's nationwide, or Kirby, worldwide too. These vessels are getting older. Coos Bay, I was reading their budget the other day, last year's budget. They have 20 abandoned vessels. We have 8 or 9 at this point. But they have 20, and they put in, you know, $100,000 or whatever for getting rid of vessels. So they used to contract it out, but their budget, what I was reading last year, they're trying to do it in-house. But they're going to rent an excavator and dispose of it themselves, is what they're planning on. I don't know what size vessels they got or anything else, but that's, we're not the only port that's having this issue. And and if there was a simple solution, it would be out there already, and we definitely would have.
So I imagine the plan is to put all that stuff over in the storage yard, if you want to call it that, instead of, you know, putting it in the working yard, which is taking up a lot of space that can be used.
And Travis plans on moving those out of there.
Excuse me?
Travis plans on moving those out of the work areas.
Good. Okay, good. Okay, next.
Okay, so next one is cold storage, which we don't own anymore. It's sold to private sector. That'll come off the budget next year, looks like. And then commercial retail. Did anybody have any questions on that?
Well, let's see what we got here.
Yeah, what about the difficulties with people complaining about their leases?
Complaining about their leases?
Who's complaining about leases?
I remember the hair place said that she was being charged something or other. There was a big to-do about that.
Yeah, well, 2 years ago, she came to the board and was complaining that she had a higher rate.
Right.
And that was taken care of. Okay. All the leases basically went to the basic level.
That's right. That's
flat rate for
so,
everything.
Yeah, her rate got fixed. So that issue's been long past over.
Good.
And done with. So
excellent.
I think everybody's pretty much in the same lease rate. The only ones that are still out there is like Zola's. For some reason, he likes paying a higher rate because he was given a draft over 2 years ago when I was here, and he's never come back with comments. So he's on a month-to-month paying a higher rate than everybody else. But
it's his choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I haven't heard too many other complaints other than, you know, we're fixing Sport Haven leases rate lease. So
basically, what I was curious about is, has it become straightforward instead of?
Yeah, I think it's been streamlined. I think it's streamlined. Like I said, I haven't heard any complaints from anybody other than Sport Haven likes to have a lease that has their name on it instead of the old one. So we're fixing that.
Good deal.
So, yeah.
And then I guess we do have a couple. We're going to try to paint the retail buildings and seal coat and restripe the parking lots as well for this year. Page 14, dredging other ports. We don't do that anymore.
Quick question. What does it take to get the dredge back so you guys can use it?
Well, that's a tougher question. So the state dredge that you're referring to get that back, Probably won't be the easy thing. When we're going to do dredging out here, we'll probably put it out to bid, just like in Coos Bay, the ones that have the dredge, they're going to have to provide a quote to the port just as well as any other contractor, because their rates, from what we've been hearing through other ports, is as high or higher than contractors. So it's going to be no different from a private contractor versus the state dredge. And if they're way higher, then that's an easy thing to say. It's like, well, we're going to go the cheaper route. So,
Gary, if that dredge was brought back, we sold all the pipe, right? So it would have to be pumped on a, it'd have to be pumped on a barge and then the material taken out, or how would that even work?
Not necessarily. The pipe that we had wasn't the right size pipe for the pump. The booster pump that we had here at one time, that pipe wouldn't work with that booster pump. So that pipe size wouldn't be the right size for what we had. So that's why they got sold, got rid of.
So what size pipe are they using now?
Well, they're using 10-inch pipe.
Well, wouldn't that be part of a contract to bring your dredging the pipe down here with the pump?
Yeah, but with the disposal of material going out the ocean is much more expensive. Is about as expensive as hauling it off. So the ideal thing is to keep your material on site.
Right.
So
build up a seawall with it.
And build up a seawall with it, yeah. That's an option. Yeah. But there's other solutions that I want to bring to the board later on. But the dredging cost, at this point, I'm hoping to get some money from FEMA. Because right now they're accepting our first storm damage to the county, so we're still working on approval for dredging here. And then the second storm, then April 6th, that's going through the process of getting approved too. So we may have two FEMA projects to get dredging done here.
I think also where the Aquina schedule or...
Yeah, I'm aware of it.
Okay.
We don't plan on dredging with the Aquina.
Not the marina, no, but how about the big bar that was created out here?
Yeah, they plan on taking care of that.
Okay.
Yep.
I think Senator White, I think it's Wyden, said he's pushing to get funding for all the Oregon ports to do this stuff, which would be a very good thing.
Yep.
That's a statewide.
This is one area that dredging that bothers me. And it bothers me because, as we've talked before, we're the recipients for everything that comes downhill. And yet, we certainly don't, I don't think that the public should expect the port to pay all the fees that it takes to get rid of that stuff that came from somewhere else. State Highway Department, County Road Department, upstream, I don't know. But I don't know how you resolve that unless you get them in some sort of a partnership on this particular drainage issue. Because just standing here looking at this one where it's so bad, I mean, that's a lot of material.
This was nothing compared to the one over by the yard. That is a big mound over there.
But this is here we sit at the bottom of the system, right, with no way to control what's going on above us, except for the good graces of permitting, and that doesn't always cut it. But the ultimate consequence is that the special district people end up paying the bill for all this. And that just doesn't sit with me as being right.
Comes with the territory, I guess.
Well, there's another issue we can talk about in a little bit about sea lions and docks, which also don't sit right with me.
Not yet.
Yeah, they belong to the state. The sea lions belong to the state, so if they're on our dock, that's the state.
They belong to the feds.
There you go.
So does the state pay for the damage that they cause?
That's what he's talking about. We need to figure out.
Well, there is no mechanism to pay. I've asked, and whereas we don't have a problem yet, certainly other people do. And I was just in Astoria last week, and gosh, I mean, that's just a complete disaster. But there is somewhere on the horizon. There's a little inkling of hope for that, because there's some discussion about the control of sea lions, particularly particularly as it relates to killer whales, this new killer whale issue that's come up in there. But bill may be sponsored to deal with that. That also has some discretion in it about paying the damage that those animals cause. You know, talking to the people in Astoria, they have basically lost an entire focus. And so that's hopefully something will come along like that. That would help. That's not really what we're talking about. So sorry.
All right. So fuel doc, page 16. I guess the only thing is we increase for repairs, maintenance, and inspections. Keep the tanks and everything kosher.
What's our profit margin on fuel?
What did we figure out? Like 27,000? It wasn't. It wasn't very much.
And what about the reconstruction of the fuel pipe coming out of the dock? What's going on with that?
We're still looking at options.
It's still functioning.
Still functioning. Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Still holding tight. Everything else is falling apart.
Okay. And did you have Mr. Akins look at that one too?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got many reports on that one. There's no easy solution to redo those lines when the entire slope is failing on us. So whatever temporary repair we do, we're still in the same boat of what we got. It all could fail. So the best solution is to get a permanent fix as fast as we can.
And the permanent, how are you fixing this up to an engineer then?
Well, the permanent fix is going to be
a seawall
or high dock with the fuel line pumps up on top. That's going to be the permanent fix.
Oh,
and that's part of their infra grant. So if your infra grant does come in August, we'll be going, that'd be the first thing we'll be going to get attacked and get done first with our $600,000 for matching from the state. So that would be like the highest priority if we did get that grant. Then we get the grant, we got 3 years to do the project. So that would be, that'd be the first year getting that done. And then work on the rest of the projects with them ahead. Grant.
How is our price of fuel compared with the rest of the state?
I don't know. I never did a study on what other ports are selling. I know we're cheaper, way cheaper than Crescent City because everybody's coming from Crescent City filling up right now because taxes are higher down there.
As for Oregon.
But as for Oregon, I haven't done a price check.
I mean, just a few phone calls to.
You have to be careful. I've asked two ports, Newport and Bandon. Mm-hmm. What do you make? And they said, we don't sell it.
Yeah, they lease out their...
It's done by a third party.
Right, they lease out the pumps.
So in the case of Bandon, the guy that runs the commercial fishing thing there has a big diesel tank, and he's the fuel gas tank. He's the one that sells the fuel. And the port doesn't touch it. Same thing in Newport. They
right.
They have it done by somebody else.
Well, what's the price of fuel, though? I mean, the price of fuel is... I mean, if we're at $5 a gallon less, you know what I'm saying?
It's directly controlled by the supplier, my information. I was up in Newport under those circumstances that the they had a third party doing that, but that third party happened to be the fuel company that supplies the fuel. So
if we do a third party, would they be responsible?
You're not going to get a break.
No, would they be responsible to maintain all the equipment?
This port's problem, we've asked multiple managers prior to me, asked for fuel companies, for anybody else come to take care, take over the fuel. There's not enough fuel that goes through there,
right,
that they even touch it. Plus, I think Newport and Crescent City, they have that leased out. Their company's like within 5 minutes of the port here, it's a half an hour or more away. And they just don't want to touch it. We just don't do enough volume for them to even think twice to come take over our fuel dock.
Right.
So we're kind of stuck with it.
It's a matter of transportation down here.
But shouldn't there be an average cost? I mean,
yeah, we'll check and see what the other ports are selling their fuel at. It should be an easy thing to do, and just see where we're at. I know right now in our port rates, I'm going to be raising the rates 3 cents. I'm asking for a 3 cent raise on a diesel and 2 cents on gas, but
from what you buy it or
Above woods, that's our margin.
If we got people coming all the way up from Crescent City to fill up with fuel, it's a long haul, just to fill up.
If you're in a, you're kind of in a spot, you got to be careful, because if we start pricing fuel too high.
No, I'm not saying too high, I'm saying what's the average, so.
The commercial guys have some opportunities that everybody else doesn't. I mean, if you want to load one of those big boats, you just call a tanker truck, and they come down and they take a feed and pump it right off the dock into the boat.
And they cover the hazardous material spill and everything associated with that?
That's right, with the insurance policy, too.
Well,
that's huge.
We charge them to do that.
Yeah, if they're going to come, then they need to have everything. I know the Coast Guard can handle a 25 to max 50-gallon spill. I went down and talked to the chief down there personally, and that's all they can handle. So if they've got a fuel tanker, there's nothing different than bringing in your own 5-gallon gas cans one at a time and dumping them into the boat, which is illegal, at least in California. So if you're doing it up here, and they're having a tanker, somebody's got to be responding, not the board.
A tanker is required to have insurance to pick up on it.
Not just insurance, but I mean, we've got to be able to stop a spill.
We have a spill plan from the delivery company.
Right.
So they're responsible for the spill plan, but we're also there to make sure it doesn't happen either, because we're going to be like first responders. So.
Right.
And then we just charge them.
Yeah, we charge them. Yeah, ridiculous.
But, I think what he's talking about is that we don't have the equipment to suck that stuff
No,
up.
We don't. There's a secret stash up at the airport that nobody knows about.
Secret stash
from FEMA.
Of equipment?
Of hazardous material absorption equipment, yes.
Okay.
But nobody wants to talk about that, but it's there. So. I think about that huge, coming from the fire service and a large, I have a big hazardous material background, and everything in this harbor and Brookings is meant to run downhill into our port. Everything. As fast as it can.
Well, as long as they're running downhill, if you look at it, you can absorb all that, you know, the spill, and then you have to get rid of it.
Well, I mean, you got to stop it. Because in minutes, it's already going out and spreading. It's faster than you can, yeah. But so, we're getting off the subject. My question is, what are we selling fuel for? And is it within an average of the state?
A competitive average.
Just reasonable. I know that we don't have California taxes, and I know that we're not a massive port, and we're not a private company, but there should be something reasonable. Just because we create our own electricity doesn't mean we have to sell it for 7 cents instead of 50 cents. But we have to be fair.
Part of the equation for fuel is the transportation, bringing it down here, okay? And then you get a place like Newport, is it very short distance?
Sure,
away
no freeways.
From Toledo or whatever.
Exactly.
Okay.
But that should be passed on to the consumer.
What we would look at is the markup rate. If we're marking up 5 cents a gallon over our cost, then that takes in all the transportation. And
our cost is designated by the supply.
So are we just selling fuel at cost? If so. I hope not. Yeah,
within the last year, we had that discussion in a meeting, in a Board of Commissioners meeting. Mm-hmm. And I don't recall what the numbers were, but it seems like we were a little higher than most.
Okay, well, that's good to know. But I mean, that's all I'm asking is where are we?
Where we are.
Yeah, no, that's my question is where are we?
We're a little bit higher than everybody else.
That's why you look at the market.
Does that sound right, Gary?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't answer your question until I call and find out what other people
are doing. Okay, there's something we can check into before we can.
Gary, I have a question.
Sure.
Last year we spent a tremendous amount of money on deferred maintenance that caught up with us. Yeah. Are we all caught up with that?
I don't think so.
What kind of big hits do we anticipate this year?
You're talking about just fuel dock alone?
Yeah, that's the subject, right?
Yeah, you're just talking about fuel dock.
Okay.
Well, there's some more things that we need to fix, like the oil water separator. I don't think that's been touched since it's ever been installed. So there's probably some upkeep maintenance catch up to do on that.
Another thing, can we do an out-of-state tax or an out-of-state something? You don't go down and get a hunting license in California for the same price you get one in Oregon if you're an Oregon resident. You pay three times the amount. Same thing in Colorado. Same thing in, you pick a place. If you're out of state, you're going to pay a hefty amount more. So, I mean, we're moving all this fuel. Whenever we move fuel, there's a cost to us with our pumps, with our equipment, with everything. So if we have a gross number of boats coming up, we need to figure, is there a way to have a separate tax for that? You go down to California as an Oregon resident, you pay taxes. Yet they come up here and they don't pay taxes on our fuel.
That's why they come up here and buy it from us.
Right, but there's, do you see what I'm saying?
But you are making your profit.
Well, it doesn't sound like a whole lot. I mean, we got not even enough to take care of the equipment. And every gallon that pumps through that machine is more wear and tear on that machine, right?
Well, Kim, you have a course of doing business at the fuel dock. Is that part of the cost of the fuel?
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean,
of course. Okay, so why should somebody from California pay more than anybody else up here?
Why should I go down to California and go dove hunting every year? I do. I go dove hunting every year, and I pay three times the amount for a hunting license, and I pay three times the amount for my tag for that privilege.
I came up here with my boat, and I didn't have to pay a sales tax from California where I bought the boat.
Right, I'm in the same situation. I came from Huntington Harbor. I hear you. Okay. I had my boat in my backyard, and I'm up here now, so I understand that completely.
Okay.
But I'm willing to pay. Also, I'm not paying $400 and something a month for a slip.
So you're asking if we can create a tax for out-of-state boats? Is that what you're
asking? Not necessarily. I see you shaking your head no, but how did they come up with charging me more for a hunting license?
Well, you're talking apple and watermelon.
Right,
close to the same thing. And if you,
okay.
If you try, it's to our advantage, in my opinion, it's to our advantage to have out-of-state boats come. They can get their gas cheaper, but if they're going to come here and more, I mean, I just happened to be sitting with a bunch of guys from California who are commercial fishermen this year at one of our meetings, and two of them said, you know, I picked Brookings to go to.
But how much are we making on, my question is, we've got this, we have X, and this is what it costs us to maintain all of our equipment, to pump every gallon, to do everything that we're doing. It cost us a specific amount of money to do business.
Wesley, we just asked her, you know, you got a cost of doing business at that fuel dock.
Right.
And the cost of the fuel is based on the cost of doing business.
But are we just breaking, where are we in
right
that?
Now in this budget, we're estimating to receive $27,000 over what we're going to be spending there. So we're going to be profiting $27,000 in this year. That's what we're estimating. So resources coming in at $580,000. Dollars, and we're spending $550,000.
That's what I'm saying. We're pumping out a lot of money, and we're taking a lot of risk. Every time we fill a boat, we take a risk because we're responsible.
Well, you know, you still deal with a nonprofit. You still deal with a nonprofit organization here. How much of a profit are you allowed to make on this stuff? You know, the business is up to.
Well, plus it helps our cash flow too. The money coming in.
Excuse me.
It helps our cash flow.
So really the question, Gary, for us, at least for me, is what's the markup rate for other ports?
Yes, that's where we start.
If we want to I mean, no matter how you do this, you're talking the difference between charging 3 cents or 5 cents a gallon.
But that's a lot of gallons, and that, those pennies add up, so.
We should have this discussion at another meeting.
Yes.
I agree.
We need to move on with today's meeting, or we're going to be here 7 o'clock.
Yeah, the rate should be discussed in our next regular meeting, because that's our port rates.
Okay, so we'll have that on.
And between there, I can call a couple of the ports and get some rates, just so that we have that discussion.
Okay.
A little more.
Okay.
And these are just estimates, too, remember that.
Right.
Okay. Okay, ISAF.
So speaking, I want to finish with Ken's for the upkeep, or what do you call it?
Deferred.
Deferred maintenance. We do need pumps at that, at the floating docks. So the pumps are old, so we might be spending some money there as well, so. Head went down.
That's exactly what I'm talking about, so.
I look at the fuel dock just like the casino looks at a buffet. They're gonna, they don't make any money on the buffet, but you got them anymore. And I look at the fuel dock a lot the same way. It's an amenity, I don't expect to make money on it.
Yeah.
If I'm gonna make money from those guys, I'd rather make it in the moorage, or hauling their boat out than at, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I said in the budget message. It's supporting other revenue sources.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that, so that's a whole different story now. That's a whole different, we haven't even discussed that. So I was just talking fuel prices, but if it's bringing in more money in different areas, that didn't help.
Yeah.
But thank you.
Okay.
All right, ISAF, that was sold to the private sector, so that will.
Zero.
Right.
And you said that the ice house and the cold storage facilities are going to disappear from the budget next time. You're just have some carryover on it.
Right. It looks like the ice house is going to be 2 years.
Right.
So the historic, if you're looking at the detailed page, so until the left columns are zero, you have to leave them on, on the budget.
Gotcha.
So land use events, that's the special events. We increase the resources. Requirements about the same. And any questions on that? Go to page 22. This is the general fund transfers, requirements, and operating contingency. Did anybody have a question on any of that?
The interfund transfer.
Huh?
I get it now.
You get it now?
It's taken me a long time to figure this out. I mean,
okay.
I understand how the budget's laid out,
mm-hmm.
and it makes perfect sense. But now that I've looked at this document and seen how this is all portrayed, now I understand all the transfers to pay off loans and all those things I got.
Okay.
So this will help with me.
Anybody else have any questions on that?
It's scary, but it helps.
No, that's good. We want you to understand it.
I got some questions.
Yeah.
The total interfund transfers, from what funds are you talking about?
So this is from the general fund.
Yeah.
You're talking about so this is requirements of the general fund, so that's going to various funds. It's just the total. If you go on the detail page, page 24.
Okay, I got it, okay.
It breaks them out.
Down at the bottom here.
So this piece right here, is this all part of an agreement you struck with IFA when we were looking at all this debt?
You can.
Which I didn't strike any agreements with them.
Well, I mean, the development of these various funds and the way you're putting money in them.
Yeah, that actually, no, it's not an agreement with IFA. The agreement, we have to pay them,
right.
but for public entity, we have to have these funds separated, so they're identified.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a state requirement, or federal requirement,
yeah.
I don't know who actually.
Yeah, those other funds are all restricted, the bond fund, the debt service, the capital projects,
right.
Reserve.
Right.
That means we have to, the funds that go in there have to be used in that fund for those projects that are listed in the budget.
Yeah. I don't know if I answered your question or not.
Well, yeah, you did.
Okay.
I think. But I mean, when I look at this, and I look at the situation that this court has been in the past, where we weren't paying our bills, this obviously wasn't in place, right?
You can answer that one.
I think it was in place, as this wasn't managed properly.
Right.
Because this USDA, this bond fund, that's actually a USDA bond fund, part of that, to borrow that money, I think they requested to have a fund for that loan by itself. So that was part of the loan agreement. The debt service fund, that's just a debt service fund to include all of our debt, besides the USDA one. So that includes a travel lift or pedal handler, any other equipment that we want to put on as a, you know, a loan through any other agency. So IFA and everybody else is under this debt service fund, so.
And we could actually put it in the general fund, but it just, it's better to have it separate.
Yeah.
Especially with all the problems in the past of.
It makes more sense to me.
Everything's cleaner that way.
Yeah.
To just say, probably no different than paying for your kid's college, you know?
Right.
You have X number of dollars coming in, you know you're gonna have to pay the college some of that, so, all right.
All right, so.
You just really, you're fairly well constrained in almost everything you do with this budget stuff, like the way Oregon wants it done and requirements of people who are giving grants and such.
Right, and, you know, this budget it's what we use to spend money. I mean, we can't go over, I mean, it has restrictions, so we want to make it right.
So, I do, actually.
The USDA revenue bond, page 25, Gary talked about that. And page 27, the debt service fund, he talked about that as well. The only, well, I don't know, should we mention the extra?
Yeah, so
okay.
On the missed payments that was done back in the tsunami timeframe, in this budget here, we're estimating, or we're proposing a $10,000 a quarter payment extra to help make up those payments, because we got to make up those payments somehow, one way or another. So, I'm going to be asking the regular board, this next meeting, approval to spend that money. But this budget is including that $40,000 extra starting.
Per year or per month, or what are you talking about?
$10,000 extra every quarter.
So
every
like
quarter.
$40,000
okay.
More.
A year.
Mm-hmm.
So this budget includes that. If the board doesn't approve it in our budget meeting, then we'll have to take it out of the budget, probably. Mm-hmm. I guess.
Well,
how do you do that?
Well, it doesn't matter if you don't spend it, you don't have to.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not.
Okay.
So
but
if you spend it and you don't have a budget, that's when it's.
The difference would be having that transfer $10,000 per quarter, or leaving that in the general fund, and that would be available for expenditure.
Right.
It's not earmarked otherwise.
Right.
Right.
Gary, am I correct in if we do not pay that, the penalty is we're no longer eligible for another IFA loan until that is paid? Is that correct?
Not entirely correct. It's the
okay.
If we don't pay the interest,
right.
This six payments that we missed is a principal. So at some point, if we don't start making that money back, if we don't pay them at all and we come up to 2030, they're going to want the $300,000 or $250,000, whatever that principal amount is. So I'd rather start paying it a little bit at a time. If we sell that land across the street, that's going to take out a huge chunk of what we still owe. I think we still owe $280,000 out of the missed payments. So they were concerned a couple of years ago when we were missing payments, and rightly so, you can't make a payment. And so like, why are you missing payments? So anyways, we're back on track with that. And I think it'd be good faith and good planning to start paying back a little bit at a time, showing that, you know, we do care and we want to make it, you know, get back on track.
Mm-hmm.
Well, by doing that, you're freeing up potential down the road. When it's paid off, you have suddenly more income or more revenue available.
Right.
But 2030 doesn't, it sounds like a long ways away. It's not.
No.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, if we start paying the $10,000 now, we're going to be done paying.
2025.
2025. So it's only 6 years down the road. But if we sell some land, it's going to chop that in half probably, if not more. So, or what other assets that we sell? We might sell some abandoned vessels. I don't know. But 80% goes to IFA, chops it down a little more, so.
Anybody interested in that piece of land?
I haven't, well, I actually talked to the gentleman 2 days ago that was interested in some other land. And I told him, well, this land's also available, so you never know.
And that, the sale of that would go back into the general fund?
Well, no. So any asset we sell, 80% has to go to IFA and 20% goes to the reserve fund.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't go back to the general.
So nothing goes back to the general fund.
Yeah.
We have to be careful what we sell because we don't have a whole lot of land down here.
Well, that's using absolutely nothing.
Right, but in 10 years, when that might be worth $5 million, if you don't think it's happened, go look at every other. I just see potential. I see potential. And I see when this port turns around and comes up, something that we sold for $100,000 is going, my house, I bought for $500,000. 6 months later, somebody offered me $2.5 million for it.
Oh, heavens.
So, and that's up here. I couldn't get it for it right now, but that was a mortgage banker that wanted it because of the view. So what I'm saying is potential.
Yeah.
And these little pieces of, I mean, damn, if you're going to sell something for $100,000 down here, I'll buy it. I'm just saying, I'm not looking 5 years from now. I'm not looking necessarily 10 years from now. So anyways, that's just a thought. Okay. We need to be very careful on what we sell because we hardly have any, we don't have hardly anything down here. So that's just my thought. Sorry, we'll go on.
All right, page 29, Capital Projects Fund. So we did add one, go to the detailed page. We did add one grant that we know of for sure. That's the MAP grant. So.
Yeah.
Maintenance assistant grant. But other than that, we haven't really appropriated any funds at this time. If we do get some money in August or October, we'll just have a supplemental budget and appropriate it that way.
Okay, the state lottery fund, where is that? Is there a special fund for ports in the state lottery fund, or how do we get those?
We don't get them. We have to spend the money first, and then we get reimbursed. So the money is going to go from whatever state agency goes. I'm not sure exactly where it comes from. The state lottery pipe fund, but it's going to go to Business Oregon IFA. They're going to be handling it. And they'll disperse the money once we spend it. So we're not going to be able to touch that money until we actually have a project that's underway, and we spend the money first, and then they reimburse us, just like the FEMA projects that we've dealt with out here. So that money is earmarked to start going from the state to Business Oregon, which is a state agency anyway, so it's going state to state, beginning October 2019 this year. So some money's going to start going into their funds. It's going to sit there until we come up with a plan. And we got 3 years, like I said in my budget message I updated, we have 3 years to spend that money, which I think is 3 years from October 2019. So October 2022 or 23, whatever. Hopefully we'll spend the money well long before that because we need it to fix things around here, so.
But the hook for us is we got to come up with the money up front.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how do you research what grants you qualify for?
Well, that's something that Jack Aiken and myself and Travis, you look at the grants to see if we actually
qualify
for them or fall in their criterias. And the infra grant was one of the main ones that actually we would qualify for.
Where is that literature, you know, available for you to overview?
It's on our website.
Okay.
There's a tab that says infra grants, you can click on that.
Is that what you're asking?
Are there any other grants available besides the ones you're utilizing now?
Well, the problem there is, we've asked for $11 million in this grant. We have to come up with matching money of $3 million. So we got to be careful how many grants we put out there, then we're going to come back with matching grants, or matching amounts.
Right.
So right now, it's not worth the port to throw out more grants, and especially if we land, we feel really confident. I think we have a 50-50 chance of getting this infra grant from what we've heard and what they want to spend. The $11 million is peanuts compared to other, you know, other ports and other places. And they're looking to put money in rural areas. So we fit that criteria. So we're hoping to get this grant. But if we do, then we got to come up with the money of matching. But my idea is use that $600,000 to kick everything off, and then we're going to be lobbying. I'll be lobbying as best I can with the state, try to get some state money. And we haven't really hit the reserve fund yet, but part of the reserve fund, I want to start showing the ports actually thinking ahead, putting money away for these grants, so I can show the state that we're actually proactive and we're doing something to help.
We already got the matching fund, yeah.
Well, we're working towards it. We don't have a lot of money to spend because we're spending $600,000 a year on debt. Or that $600,000 could go right into the reserve fund for these projects. So right now we're putting $125,000 in that reserve fund, showing it some good faith. And I hope that would generate some support when I go up to Salem next year.
This is one of the advantages of spending down the debt and getting that paid off.
Yes.
If then we have $40,000 and we've got to match that on a 3-1 basis, you're looking at 3 times that,
right,
in terms of grantability. So it gives you an awful lot more flexibility in future funding.
Yep.
You've only got to come up with $40,000 for a $200,000 project or whatever. So that's,
yep,
that's why it's important to have that paid down and have that cash.
Yep.
Because that's worth a lot of money. Actually.
Yep.
Well, let's keep this rolling.
Okay. Yeah. So
well, it's just one more point. It's really important to use that $600,000 for a grant, because we're going to maximize that money. But if we don't get any grants in the next several years, we're going to have to spend that $600,000
right
on a project,
yeah,
to use it, or
right,
we're going to lose it.
Yeah,
so
we don't want to lose it.
Yeah.
You got plans for that, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think there's any problems.
Yeah, I don't think so. And then 32, so Gary's already touched on the reserve fund that we're hoping to transfer in $125,000, which could be used for port assets or the matching funds for the grants. So we definitely want to get going on that, start putting that money away.
Yeah, so you know that $125,000 just isn't going to go immediately right into that reserve fund. We're going to be putting it away each month.
Okay.
That's the best way to do it, we found, you know.
Because
okay,
you don't want to lock that money away, just in case
right
something bad happens.
Right, because that goes in, that's a restricted fund. Once we put the money in there, we can't take it out again.
Just a stupid question here. You know, the money you're talking about, is it a bank somewhere?
Now, this is all estimated, you know.
Well, if you're just
scrolling,
the $3 million,
the cash
on reserve.
Excuse me? Yeah.
Fort Knox.
Well, on our, we do weekly reports, but on our monthly report to the board, we show how much money we have in the bank.
Okay.
And it's floating between $300,000 to $400,000, depending on how much money we spend paying off. You know, we got to pay the contractor first, then we get reimbursed from FEMA.
And what bank are you guys using?
We actually have two banks. Umpqua we use for the basic stuff, checking, and
yeah,
and then the LGIP, which draws a lot of interest. That's Oregon State Treasurer.
Okay.
So that's where the
good
bulk
that's
of it is.
That's where I was going, the interest rate on this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a lot better than any other place.
Is it over 1%?
Oh, yes.
Okay. We're
yeah, it's like
we're
over 2%.
Okay.
We're making a lot more money there than we ever have.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
So.
Okay.
Okay,
let's
keep
it rolling.
Okay.
Well, when I look at that $125,000, I see $500,000.
Exactly.
Yep. Right.
So.
All right, so page 34, so this is just the schedules of page 35. This breaks it down, the personnel services, especially, and then 36 and 37 is the debt service payment schedules. You just have the payments broken out, principal and interest. And then page 38 is a list of the reserve fund, which I just broke it up into, Gary already has it listed at like 50, how many, 57?
57 items, yeah.
And it doesn't mean that we have to spend $24.50 on each one. I just plug those numbers in.
Particular page, but this shows depreciation. Normally, in my experience with depreciation, is that comes off your taxes, but we don't pay taxes. So what's the point of having it here?
The auditors like to see, I think the auditors like to see the value of your assets.
And okay. It is required for us to show the depreciation.
Right. Even though we don't do it for taxes, tax purposes, right. But yeah, it's
like on the audit, and it'll come out there.
This is my pet peeve as well. So if this port was running properly the last 25 years, our depreciation is hard to read this thing, but this $5,700,000, if the port was putting the money away the proper way, you know, doing everything the proper. Didn't have all this debt, we could be sitting at $5 million in a bank right now. We wouldn't be worried about our matching funds. We'd have funds to fix the port, but we don't. I think 2 years ago we had $0 in a reserve fund. So it's going to take time to build this back up.
We'll get there.
So, yeah, we're working in the right direction.
Okay, Al.
Well, that is the budget. Thank you so much. Does our board director have any further comments or thing on your mind that you want to express? Yes, no?
Just see if there's any public comments.
We do have one public person in here.
comment how wonderful Commissioner Ferrucci is, please.
Oh,
just
on
for the
record.
Okay. Well, I guess for the record, you do need to ask for public comments.
Right. That's. I was going to go up if the you two guys made a comment overall of maybe your future, your what you really want to accomplish with this whole thing, because I think this is the first time I've ever seen it that had a view of the future instead of just a sort of survival, the survival rate. And thank you so much for being a man of the future with Ms. Kim over here, of course. Anything to say, Kim?
No, I don't.
Is there any comments from the commissioners?
I got one question, curiosity. Remember there used to be renting space out here on the boardwalk and all this kind of stuff, and it turned out that whoever set that up was making a lot of money and the port was not. Can this be reaccomplished so the port makes a profit on it?
Well, we are making a profit, but that's something the board would have to decide. It's really not a budget topic.
I mean, is it going to be considered at all?
Yes.
Well, that's up to
the
commissioners.
I have kind of fallen by the wayside on my little meeting with some special events people, but we'll get that gin back up. And one of the questions we've asked is, so are the fees we're charging for these events appropriate? Is the port subsidizing?
Well, really what I'm asking is, would this turn out to be a worthwhile thing? Should it be encouraged to get more things happening than just pirates down here making noise and you know, the Sunday afternoon, Saturday afternoon vendors out there. I mean, Slime and Salmon used to be pretty interesting once upon a time. That kind of stuff was quite popular.
Well, just looking at the pirates, because I came down here and wandered around during the pirates. I estimate that off of this power box out here, there were over 50 things plugged into that at one time. And I mean, there were power cords like this running all down the, and then there are branch outlets. I mean, I don't know that we break even on power. Those were some of the questions we had. There's some issues about security, some of those kind of things.
Parking.
Parking, that's the big one, a big one. That came up because of the new boat ramp.
Well, in the heyday of the port managing these kind of events, they, you know, in a good day, they broke even. So the question is, how much do you want to be involved in a carnival, you know, on the boardwalk here? I mean, you know, so if you farm it out to somebody that'll organize it and do all the grunt work to put the whole thing together instead of having port personnel doing it, is the question. Is that what you're asking?
Well, is there any practical approach to getting this so it's going to be a useful source of revenue?
It's all according to who's going to put the whole thing together. If the port does it, it takes an extraordinary amount of time, a lot of phone, a lot of getting people together. Or you can farm it out, have somebody else do that, all the grunt work, and just charge them a minimal amount of money. It's up to the port director, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, versus what we had before, the port was losing a tremendous amount of money doing these events and planning them and doing everything else. And
exactly.
All we heard was complaints, complaint after complaint of things not done right. So the way we're doing it now, we're not losing money. We might be breaking even, we might be making a little bit of money, but we're not losing thousands of dollars. And we're basically subsidizing the events. Our infrastructure here is not really set up for events. So, you know, we don't have the parking to do it all properly. The power that you're talking about, I'm surprised, every time we had an event, I was down here a year ago or two, the breakers are breaking all the time. The infrastructure here is horrible for these big events. Yeah. It's a battle every time we have an event. And our restrooms, luckily our restrooms are fixed now, but we had events where the restrooms shut down on us.
Yeah.
It was ugly. And yeah, go ahead.
As far as the Slam and Salmon, which was a big, big event here, the undetermined, you know, success of having a salmon season is questionable now to begin with.
Yeah.
Who is it? Jim Rutherford and...
Roger Thompson.
Not Roger Thompson, but
Blodgett,
right. Put that whole thing together, working under the port, of course. So it's a lot of work and a lot of hustle, and I don't think you have the personnel to put that whole thing together.
We don't have the proper personnel.
Right. And so you can farm it out and...
Well, that's right now, that's the best way to do it. We're not reinventing the wheel. Other ports, I go back to Newport, is similar size, but they have much better facility to support it, and they charge their organizations or whoever's doing it by the people that they estimate. So they have a rate of 1 to 1,000 is this much, and over 1,000 to this it's this much. Their rates are on the website. I think the rates are actually in the next meeting, but.
Well, come on. But
I mean, that's another idea. It's like, if you estimate 5,000 people here, maybe it's a $3,000 charge.
So one of these days when you have a sleepless night, think about what kind of
2 years ago when I first presented as the board, I had a square footage rate, and I used the square footage rate based on what it costs to maintain the port. So I went through a long. I did a lot of study on it, and the rates were, I think, about three times higher than what we currently charge. And the blowback that we got was tremendous. We're going to kill everything. Nobody's going to do anything. So the rates went way down, And that's where they've been sitting at.
The main recipients of these events is the commercial business around here.
Right.
Whether it be the hotels or the restaurants or anything. And their contribution was very, very small. I didn't see any kind of...
No.
So I would... You know, if you can't get these people involved in this thing, I don't know.
That's an idea.
When Fitzgerald was the manager here, I just flat told him, you're in the carnival business here, and you know, it's ridiculous.
Now, yeah. I've done a lot of special events, and I'm an advocate for having special events down here. But they've got to be organized. The port has to make a profit on them, not break even.
Right, right.
And we don't need the stress and strain on all of the port staff.
Well, that's where, yeah.
So,
especially
the people need to come forward with a proposal where the port makes a reasonable amount of money.
Great.
And then they're going to have to provide law enforcement, and they're going to have to supervise their own parking. I mean, those are two criteria that I have.
This is up to the availability of money. Get the port director to come up with some kind of a plan for to farm this stuff out like that.
Richard's working on that.
Oh, good.
We're working on talking about some of the issues. I don't have a lot of solutions.
Okay. Anyway, let's get back
okay.
to business here.
Okay.
Any more comments? Public comments? Rick?
Well, basically, I think we've covered everything that's appropriate. Very successfully, and I move the budget committee accept this.
Let's hold off on that for a second. Let everybody have a comment first.
Oh.
Camille?
Well, I don't have any comment to change anything, but see, for me, this is all new information. I have to sit and listen to all the background information so I start really understanding how this comes to this point. Yeah, I mean, I could read this and memorize it, but it's not going to be meaningful until I hear all the background. So, like, next year, I really have more to offer than I do this year.
Okay, good.
Huh? I'm good.
I will compliment you on this document.
Yeah.
I thought it was put together well. I understood it.
that's the main thing.
And frankly, it's a nice looking document. I'd be proud to show this to anybody that asked what our budget looked like. So good job on that.
I'm good.
Wesley?
I'm all for it. And you guys are doing a great job.
Anybody want to pass a motion now?
I move that the budget committee approve it.
Anybody second it?
I will.
Let's have a vote.
Roll call.
Danielle.
Richard?
Yeah. Richard.
To the last.
Rick.
Pardon?
Sorry.
What?
The last name.
Rick.
Oh.
Vote.
Yes or no?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. Tom?
Yes.
Al?
Yes.
Richard?
Yeah.
Ken?
Yes.
Wes?
Yes.
Well, that is passed. For the budget of 2019.
Yeah, one more there.
20?
Yeah, one more.
One more.
What?
Want me to do it?
Yeah, go ahead.
I move that the budget committee approve the tax rate of 0.1316 per $100,000 upon
$1,000.
$1,000 upon the assessed value of all taxable property within the district for the tax year 2019-20 for operating purposes in the general fund.
Second.
A second.
I'll okay. second. Oh, Ken second it.
Roll call.
Rick?
Yes.
Yeah.
Can we discuss that?
Yes. You comment.
What is our tax rate right now?
That's what it is.
That's what it is.
Oh, okay.
We can't change it.
We can't change it.
Okay.
Well, that's roll call.
All right. Okay. It's a roll call.
Tom?
Yes.
Al?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Wes?
Yes.
Anything else that you guys want to say?
Good job.
This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great job.
You want to do it?